Welcome to Process Breakdown, where we get proven and successful entrepreneurs to reveal step by step what's currently working behind the scenes in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and take notes as you discover how today's guest has been able to systematize their entire business so that it runs successfully without their constant involvement, like a well-oiled machine on overdrive. And here is your host.
Hi, my name is Owen Megabinawo, and welcome to episode 44 of the Process Breakdown podcast. In this interview, my guest reveals how systematizing his restaurant business enabled him to grow, scale, and eventually sell it. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor. Are you tired of being the bottleneck in your business? Do you want to get everything out of your head and document step by step how you get tasks done so your employees know what you know and actually get the tasks done correctly? Well, sign up for a free 14-day trial or sweet process. And now, let's get started with the interview. My guest today is Gabe Da Silva, and he is the founder of My First Restaurant. Gabe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Owen. Thanks for having me.
So let's dive right in. What exactly does your company do, and what big pain or problem do you solve for your customers?
Well, My First Restaurant is an online community that I built for new and aspiring restaurateurs. And it's a place where they can come and get the tools and training they need to successfully open their first restaurant. Essentially a tool that I wish had existed back when I opened my first restaurant a few years back.
Okay, awesome. So the listener right now is listening to this interview to understand how you systematize your business. Even though your current business right now is focused on training potential restaurateurs on how to, you know, create restaurants and systematize and whatever, the goal of this interview is to focus on the previous restaurant you had and how you systematize it. And I think as a result, we're able to sell it, right?
Absolutely. Exactly.
Okay. So that being the focus of the interview. So at that time, you know, how many before the sale, how many full-time employees did you have?
At our peak, we had seven full-time employees.
Awesome. And so go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say it's obviously very seasonal. So you can imagine that would be during our peak summer months and as low as three or four during off season.
What kind of restaurant is it? I'm just curious.
It was a healthy lifestyle inspired menu, wraps, burgers, salads, things like that.
Awesome. And so as much as you can share with us, what was the revenue before it got sold and, you know, stuff like that? That way the listener can get some context as to what you were doing before you sold it, I guess.
Yeah, I can give you kind of an estimate just because of the sale. I can't be too specific, but about $500,000 in revenue. And one thing I didn't say about the restaurant itself is that it was a fast casual concept, one where consistency was critical to our success, which, you know, lends itself really well to systematizing.
Awesome. So going back to, you know, that business itself. So, you know, what would you say was the, you know, lowest point in that business and describe how bad it got at that point?
Yeah, I can tell a couple of really, really good stories about hitting rock bottom as a as a first time entrepreneur, as a restaurateur. You're constantly you're a full time decision maker, you're full time everything. And there were a few super long nights where, you know, you just had a bad service and just everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And I can recall one night in particular sitting there crying in the basement over a lost sale at the end of a shift, 16-ish hour day, and just like at that point you're just physically beat, your mind, just everything. And I remember sitting there thinking, like, I knew it wasn't gonna be easy, but it doesn't need to be this hard. And that was early on. That was before I realized the value of a system, and I was doing everything back then. And my partner and I went through the ringer.
I'm just curious, what triggered the lost sale? I just want to put the listeners in your state of mind and just what happened when you started crying about the business.
Yeah, it was my fault. It was my lack of understanding of technology. It was the point of sale system that we had spent a ton of money on, and it was a super robust system, far too robust for us at the time, and just. I lost a sale because a glitch, something I didn't do right. I didn't close out a sale correctly. And it was the last sale of the night. We had closed the store and someone came to the door and said, I have I have an order for a small group. Can you guys put this together? And we had turned everything off. We were cleaning. And I said, for sure, you know, that's what we're there to do. So we turned everything back on. We turned this we put this order together. And he pays with a credit card. And on his way out, as we locked the door behind him, I realize the order didn't go through as he gets in his car and pulls away. And it was just, it's just the icing on the cake that day.
And you mentioned during the pre-interview that, you know, one of the issues the challenges at that time was, you know, finding time to do everything yourself. Can you explain that?
Well, yeah, just when you're trying to do, you can't do more than one thing well. You can't do all those things well. And I was trying to do everything. I was trying to be our point of sale person. I was trying to be our grill man. I was trying to be our marketing guy. And my partner and I, we were spread so thin. And you just, when you try and do too much, that's what happens. You know, you can't do all those things well. And we paid the price for it at the beginning.
And I think maybe you were trying to get at this during the pre-interview was it the problem because of that you being a firm believer that before you systematize everything, you need to know how everything was done? Is that why you were going through that overwhelm of trying to do everything?
Yeah, it's superhero syndrome. You know, it's just that. As it's your baby, so you want to do everything. You want to have your hands in everything. You become a micromanager to some extent. It's just you almost have to do everything once yourself, just so you know how long it should take and what it should cost. But beyond that, you know, if you've done the same task five times, it's time to automate. It's time to delegate. You know, it's time to systematize and delegate. There's no sense doing the same thing over and over and over. And we were doing that. We were guilty of doing all of those things over and over and over when there were plenty of capable people around us that we could have delegated those tasks to.
Yeah. So besides the issue of you trying to be the superhero, try to do everything yourself, what other thing was a big challenge at that time?
I would say the learning curve was especially steep for us because we came into the business with no restaurant industry experience. So, you know, you're trying to learn a business, but then you're trying to learn the specifics of your business as well. So that makes it increasingly more difficult. And that was something that we had to overcome, just learning the business and then learning the specifics of our business.
Okay. So let's talk about, you know, now that you've mentioned two things, one of them being you trying to do everything. And the other one was trying to learn the specifics of your business while trying to run the business. You know, let's talk about what were some of the things that you did to solve the problem. So what was the very first thing you did?
Well, I'd say that the first thing was the divide and conquer method. I was fortunate to have a partner. And, you know, when it comes time to learn, we focused on what our strengths were. We sat down and talked about what we were good at individually and then attacked the business from that perspective. And, you know, operations weren't necessarily my strength. So that's something that he took on. And then the things that were my strength, the finances, the marketing, the back end stuff. And that's the stuff that I took on. And you kind of divide and conquer and you take on as much as you can handle and you get in there, you dig in and you try and understand as best you can each and every process well enough that you can then delegate it to someone else. That was a critical mindset shift. It went from being the doers to the trainers, you know, and that was a huge turning point for us.
So the very first thing you did is basically you realized that, you know, you and your co-founder, I guess, or your partner, you had several strengths and you wanted to pay, you know, attention to your strengths. You divided the work based on the strength. And then the next thing I think you said was that you guys now decided to train the trainers. Was that the next thing? And let's talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. So you figure out what you're good at and what you're not good at. And the things that you are good at, you learn them. And then you go and no one wants to, you don't want to be the trainer forever either. So once you understand what each individual task requires of you, how long it should take, how much it should cost, you then start, you delegate it and you hold people accountable and you give them the authority to do the things that you no longer want to do because they're just not an ideal use for your time. And that's what we did. We would learn how to do each and every thing and then find someone on our staff that we could delegate that task to and then move on to something else and something else. And you slowly, it's the, you know, what's the best way to eat an elephant? It's just one bite at a time. So we approached the store was the elephant, and each task was the bite. And you kind of approach it from that perspective, that regard.
I even skipped something too, because I realized that you actually said that the very first thing you even did was after taking the time to learn how the task is done, you actually spent time to systematize it before you even got to the point of training the trainer. So just to be on the same flow of, you know, how it actually happened, talk about that very thing, you taking over the task, trying to do the task and then systematizing it. Let's talk about what you learned during that period.
Mm-hmm. So as you're doing it, you often don't realize that what you're doing is what you need to be teaching someone else to do. You just get into the habit of doing, which we did. You just get into the habit of doing the same things over and over and over for no particular reason. And it doesn't matter how busy you are, no business, every business, there's time where you can sit down and reflect on what you've done. So that's when we had that downtime, we sat there with pen and paper and documented what we had done. And that's what you ultimately use to train the trainers, the people that you want to then delegate the work to. And that's something that we did a really horrible job of it up front, but as time progressed, we got better and better at it. And you start with an outline of what you did. You just hand write down the steps, what you did, you know, if you're opening like the store, what did you do to open? What, you know, come 9 o'clock, you've been open for an hour and a half. You've done a handful of things. Just, you know, take a minute, stop and write down each one of those things. And then the next day, come in and fill in the times at which you did those things, because you do the same thing over and over each day. You don't even realize that you're doing it a lot of the time. So that's how we then started creating the systems that we would ultimately use to train.
Okay. So basically you started writing out what you were doing, gradually were building them over time. And one of the things you mentioned during the pre-interview was that you made sure that before you even systematized it, you took the time, at least a month or so, to, you know, handle the task yourself while at the same time documenting how you're doing it. So that was the first thing. Then now we're talking about training the trainers. At this point now, I'm guessing that you had, for each of the tasks that you wanted to delegate, you had some form of, you know, process documents to hand over to the trainers. Can you talk about that? What did they look like, and how did you use it to even train the trainers?
Yeah, so each individual task is different, and, you know, you have to do certain things for a certain amount of time to get an understanding of how long they should take and what they should cost. The more involved the task is, the longer you have to do it to better understand it before you can document a policy, a process. So it was, you know, everything, it was dependent on that specific task, but we ultimately put together a binder of processes, of policies and processes for each and every task. And those things, they were step by step, and we mimicked ours after Subway's. And, you know, Subway has a 2,000 page ops manual. It's, mm-hmm. it's insane. Everything down to, you know, how to load the toilet paper in the bathroom is documented step by step. And we kind of mimicked that and we went and we got really deep, in some cases too deep, I think, for us, you know, as okay. a single unit fast casual restaurant concept. It's not critical that you have a documented policy on how to reload the toilet paper in the bathroom, you know, but the things that were important, we got down to the nitty gritty on, and that's specifically, that's things like menu items and executing and how to greet customers and script for answering the phone. Things that touch the customer, things that that we thought were of utmost value. Those are the things.
Let's dive right into that, because my question now is to find out what specific systems in the business that enable you to run it, you know, without your constant involvement. And one of the things you mentioned was that you had something called a kitchen Bible. Can you talk about that? What it was and, you know, what it contained and stuff like that?
Yeah, in fast casual restaurants, especially, the consistency is key. And what we realized up front was that without a documented system, we weren't going to be able to execute anything consistently. So that was one of the first things that we systematized, was our menu, mm-hmm. and the way we did that was, we went, and those are the kinds of things I was talking about that take a month to do. You have to sit there and execute the same dish over and over and over a handful of times, all the components, all the sub recipes, and you have to understand what it takes to make them and how they should look and how they should taste. And that's when you can put together, in this particular example, it was a kitchen Bible, which was a binder that sat downstairs in the kitchen. And each dish, each finished dish was pictured on one side of the page. Mm-hmm. And on the back side of the page was the list of ingredients and the steps you would take to execute that dish.
Okay.
And that same image that sat in that Bible was then posted in the kitchen where it could be seen by the line cooks. So it was what ultimately led and consistency wound up being one of our strengths, something that people spoke to a lot on Yelp and just customer feedback in general. It was just a lot of times people would say, you, and I'm sure you and your listeners can speak to this too. You'll go into the same place today, and then you go there a week later, and the dish that you had last week that you loved doesn't taste the same. Why is that the case? You know, and that's huge in fast casual. You have to be able to give the person a consistent experience every single time. And that's how we went about doing that. We took each and every recipe and we made sure we understood how it needed to be done, what it took, how long it took, what went into it. And we documented that. And that's what we would hold. And ultimately, once you have that document in place, once you have that kitchen Bible, you don't necessarily need to be the person making the dish anymore. You can be the person tasting it, you know, spot checking it. But then you no longer need to be the person doing it. But at first, that was so critical to our success that we made sure that we did it every single time for, you know, a month. I would say the first 3 months we devoted to the kitchen Bible.
And I love that because I want to just make a point to the listener that, you know, yes, you're talking about, you know, a restaurant. And in this case, the recipe is key to, you know, making sure that because people are coming to eat the food. So the food itself, how the food is being created, that's kind of likened to the operations of the business because that's, you know, people are coming to eat the food. And someone who's listening to this might not have a restaurant, but what you're essentially saying was the first step was to systematize the operations. That's essentially what you're saying.
The thing that means the most whatever touches the customer, whatever's most important in your
delivery,
particular business, that's what you have to address first. I think what touches the customer is most important. Like the last thing we needed to be doing was worrying about like a cell phone policy and I don't want to say a uniform policy because that was important because we wanted a consistent look. But, you know, there's some things that we spent a lot of time and effort on that weren't necessarily critical. The things that were critical, the kitchen Bible, we addressed right up front. We just knew from the get-go that that was a critical piece of our concept, and we would need to make sure that was on point to succeed. And, you know, everybody out there has something in their particular business that they know is of the most value and the most important thing. That's what they need to address first. That's what they need to systematize first.
Especially since in your case, the food itself, delivering the food, making sure that is the right taste and it tastes the same all the time. That is, you know, essentially key to the success of the business. So the listeners listening to this now, you might not be in a restaurant business, but whatever steps that you need to take to actually deliver the results to your customer, that in this case will be your recipe in that sense.
That's their kitchen Bible. Absolutely. That's where they need
Bible.
To start.
And so you mentioned during the pre-interview that, you know, doing this also enabled you to calculate the costs and margins of each dish. Talk about that.
Yes. So aside from the freedom that, well, ultimately systematizing anything, it frees you up as an owner to do other things, to do things that are of more quantifiable value to the business. So the first thing that getting a kitchen Bible in place did for us was it freed us up to then start educating staff so that way they know what to better sell. One is a direct result of the other. So now knowing how each dish is executed and what it costs to make and how long it should take, you can then approach your staff and then start to train them. And then, you know, you can educate them. There's no sense in having someone sell your $12 salmon dish when it costs you $11 to make, when they can be selling your $6 salad, which costs you a dollar or two to make.
Yeah.
You know, it's margins. A lot of times staff and just people in general think that the more expensive something is, the more money you make on it. Well, that's not necessarily true. Often it's the opposite is the case. And you want to be able to sit there and have that. You need that kind of that in your back pocket before you can go and sit down with staff and start to educate them on how they sell, what they sell, when they should sell it. And that was, I would say, one of the first things we did once we had
the kitchen Bible.
The first system developed was to then leverage that and start to train staff on how to sell what we now know.
Yeah. And so you mentioned that besides the kitchen Bible, you also have something that which you call the operations manual, which contains everything from how to greet the customer over the phone and how to lock up for the day. Can you talk about that and in more details a little bit?
Yeah, part of the operations manual is the stuff we just talked about, just the offshoot of the kitchen Bible. So, you know, we have different menu categories, and a customer comes in and they ask you what's the best salad. They often don't say what is the best tasting salad in your opinion. They say what's the best salad, what's the best this, what's the best that.
Yeah.
Well, you train your staff to recommend things based on margins, and you know you encourage them to interject their opinion when appropriate. But they need to know that the reason that they're saying what they're saying is because it benefits us as much as it benefits the customer.
Yeah.
And you can't do that. And you can't do that without the kitchen Bible. That feeds into the operations manual. And then, you know, other things over time, we develop scripts for call lists. When a customer calls in, the customer needs to be greeted the exact same way every single time. You know, that's something that you develop a script for, you know. A customer walks through the door. How are they greeted? You often go on Yelp and you see, when you see those 4 or 5 paragraph long one-star Yelp reviews, the very first thing every time.
They
didn't greet me when I walked in. It's you know, the customer leaves unhappy and they start from the very beginning when they go to draft those horrible reviews. They start from the beginning.
And so I was sharing the story about how, you know, I was looking for a bar and, you know, and saw this review on Yelp. This person was basically complaining to the extent they even took a picture of the bartender who happened to not even know they were taking a picture of her. But based on the picture, you could see the bartender's face. She was probably pissed at something. And they left a whole paragraph of how bad its service was, you know. But you're right. So it's really critical to really address how, you know, people even greet, you know, and attend to your customers and the customer experience. Mm-hmm. You know, go ahead, take it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll often find that happy people will leave the shortest reviews. Happy people will give recommendations, but they'll be the shortest. And the unhappy people will take their time and they will go out of their way to bash you. you need to turn haters into lovers at every possible anytime you can. And in our business, there's a love-hate kind of relationship with Yelp and those other review sites because for that very reason, it's you have to be constantly on there. It has to be monitored constantly. But that applies to everyone out there and all their businesses. You have to make sure every customer is happy. And the ones that aren't happy, just know that if you don't do your best to make sure that they leave happy, they're going to go out of their way to make sure that no one else comes.
Also, it's not only about just making them happy, and it doesn't just happen like that. The reality of what you're saying is it actually took you taking time to figure out, okay, how do we systematize how the customer's experience is? That's really what it boils down to. And the listener who's listening to this basically too has to look at, you know, the experience they want to deliver to the customer. How can they create kind of a platform or a roadmap in which their employees can deliver that same experience, regardless of whether they're there or not?
Yeah, you have to just. It sounds like marketing speak. It sounds abstract. But you just really need to put yourself in the position of your customer and just think: if you were on the other side of the aisle, on the other side of the counter, how would you be best served, and what would make you happy, and what would make you want to go above and beyond and tell friends, family, and whoever would listen about your experience with whoever, what product, what store, what have you. And that's something that we did, we zero food service experience, but we had been patrons plenty, just like everyone else out there.
Yeah.
Everyone who wants to get into the restaurant business, for example, has been to restaurants a handful of times, hundreds of times. Just think about your favorite experiences and how you were treated and how you would want to be treated, and then kind of keep that in the back of your mind when you're developing the system by which your staff will then treat your customers.
Awesome. And so this is a question that my listeners like, is where I actually ask you to compare your business to like a conveyor belt. In this case, you happen to be somebody who's hungry, who's trying to buy, you know, the product that your restaurant sells. maybe they've not heard about you or heard about you, but they're at the very extreme end of the conveyor belt. And on the other end, they are now have gone, you know, come to your restaurant, they've eaten and they love the food, and they're out there raving and, you know, raving crazy and happy about, you know, telling everybody about your business. But behind the scenes, there's a bunch of, you know, systems and processes and people making things happen behind the scene to make that happen. And so I want you to just kind of give us like an overview of all of the different parts that was happening behind the scene in that business to make that transformation for the customer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in our particular business, something we took a lot of pride in, and part of the reason that the kitchen Bible that we referenced earlier was so important is because we had an open kitchen, an open concept. So that's a trend. That's something that's happening more and more here, especially in New Jersey, and people want to see the product
in Chipotle.
Right. Exactly. The best example, Chipotle. And just a plug for Chipotle, we mimicked our kitchen Bible after Chipotle's.
We'll talk about that too. Yeah.
Right. Go ahead. So that's something that we took into account. So you would come in and you'd see these abstract, not even images on our menu in particular. They were just descriptions. And mm-hmm. you'd see something and you'd say, okay, I want that dish because it sounds like something I feel like eating today. But you'd watch us assemble it across the line. You would order on the far right. And over the course of three or four stations, we would put the dish together. And on the far left of the restaurant would be a pickup window where you'd be handed your dish, which you saw assembled from start to finish. And I think in food service especially, there's a lot of value in that because so often you go to a restaurant and you see these doors, these swinging doors, and you don't know what's going on behind them. And you order a dish and it comes out and it's either good or it's not. And what happened back there? Why is mine not good? The guy next to me got the same thing. That's why I ordered it. And he loved his. And why am I not liking mine? Well, in our particular case, you got to watch your dish assembled start to finish. And that's something I think there's a lot of value in for customers there.
Yeah, so I get the system you had in place when the customer was already in there. They get to watch how the food is being prepared and they walk down the line. I'm curious, was there any systems you had in place to even attract someone who didn't even know about you guys into the whole funnel in the first place?
But that's something we didn't put any thought or effort into up front.
Okay.
That's something that over time we started to grow and learn the value of up front. When I opened, the first thing I did was before I signed a lease for the space, I sat in front of it and encountered passersby for days.
Yeah.
I sat there, you know, and this is the kind of stuff we're talking about. If you want to really dig in, you want to really put in the time and effort. This is what I did. I sat outside in front of the space that we were talking about signing a lease on, and I counted passersby. And I got to the point where I saw enough people walking by that I knew, regardless of anything else, we would have enough people trickle through the door that we could break even.
Yeah.
And that's not the right way to do it, but it's a way to make sure. It's you know, and that's something that we did up front. But beyond that, within the first, I would say, 6 months or so, that kind of starts to fade.
Yeah.
And then you have to come to terms with reality, and that if you build it, they will come.
Doesn't
really work. It doesn't exist. You know, you're not so you're not Kevin Costner. You need to really dig
go
in.
Hustle. Yeah.
And you got to go work and you have to hustle. And that's something that we then started to do. We would prepare catering orders for people who didn't order them and go on site and drop food off. Just as a gift, we would prepare and just pack a cooler full of food, and my partner would go and he would drive to charter schools and just municipalities and places around town and just drop off food and let them know that we were available to cater if they were at an event or if they were ever looking for a place to go to lunch, we were there. And that's what we did to try and get the word out once the initial buzz faded.
Awesome. And I like that because I wanted to give the listeners kind of like, you know, what's happening even before the person hear about you. And I'm glad that you shared some of the things that you guys did. And then once they now came in, they can now also see what of the systems that was happening behind the scenes inside of the restaurant to produce the food and all that. And so what challenges did you experience when you initially tried to create systems for the business, and how did you even solve them?
The first challenge is getting the buy-in of your staff, because especially in our case, when you don't come in in a position of authority, us with zero restaurant experience, you come in and then you do.
And they know that.
And they know it.
Yeah.
Right. Realistic. They know it. You're not tricking anyone. You come in and you have to, but you do everything enough times to where you become an authority, mm-hmm. you know, where you become the expert on making this particular dish. And you have to just, it's almost like a game. I don't want to say it's a game, but you're playing with personalities. You're trying to get these people to understand and buy into the idea that the systems that you're trying to force on them, because the systems didn't exist at first. That's what made it hard. If you go and you get a job somewhere and they tell you how your job is supposed to be done from day one, you're not as likely to question it. But when you get hired based on your skill set and you're asked to do a job, and then a couple of weeks later they come in, they tell you how you should be doing the job that you've already been doing your way.
Yeah.
It becomes really challenging. And that's where we found a little bit of pushback. And the way we overcame it was you have to kind of explain why this way is the way.
You termed it during the pre-interview, you say you used the trick of empowerment. I like that. So how did you trick them and empower them at the same time? So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So empowerment is a way to kind of, you know that your way is the best way because you just did it. Mm-hmm. You did it. You've done it 100 times.
Yeah.
You know that this is the way, but they have their ways and they come in with their habits and you kind of give them your script. You give them your process and you empower them to do the work and you expect that they'll do it your way. And often they will, most often they will, because you're the boss and they'll accept that and they'll do it, which is good. But a lot of times you'll get, they'll have bad habits or they'll push back or, you know, whatever the case is. But the empowerment piece of it is, I think, what got them to commit in our particular case, what got mm-hmm. our staff to commit was the empowerment piece. And just knowing that we were giving them the authority to do something, we were just giving them the tool to do it the best way, what we thought was the best way. And, but we were always very, very good about receiving feedback. And so you empower them to do something, you give them what you think and what you say is the best possible tool to do it. And then, but then you're open to them coming back to you with feedback.
So basically if they end up doing it better than you, you essentially win and you give them the feeling that, hey, they actually improve whatever process you already had in place.
That's the ultimate scenario. Is for your staff to do the job that you empower them to do better than you. If your staff can, your staff should be able to do the job better than you. That's an ideal scenario. You don't ever want to be, in our case, I never wanted to be good with a knife. I never wanted to be the best prep cook on the line. You don't want to be those things. You want your staff to be better than you at that. You want your staff to be faster than you at point of sale. You want them to be better than you at everything. You know, because if you're better than them, then that means you're doing it far too often and you're not focusing on the things that matter.
Yeah. And so what other challenge besides the issue of pushback, which you solve using the empowerment trick, what other issue came to mind at that point?
Well, just the same thing I referenced with the breakdown in the process, not the breakdown necessarily, but the process as you know it. It may not necessarily be the best way to do something a week from now or a month from now.
Yeah.
You did it for however long you thought it took to best understand it, and you documented it, you systematized it, and you then delegated the task to someone, you empower them to go and do it. And then you're open to them coming back to you with feedback. And then a month later, for example, they come back to you and they say, listen, I've been doing this the way you told me to do it. And I've been getting pushback, or this isn't working, or this is taking a lot longer, but here's a way. Here's a better way. You have to be willing to accept that feedback and go back then, revisit the process and then rewrite it and then begin to accept that that's the new way. You know, your way is not always the right way.
So it's kind of like an ego, being able to accept that you might not know what you're talking about and your way might just suck. So dealing with your ego, basically.
Yeah, ego wrangling. It's like ego wrangling, but on yourself, not your staff.
Yeah, definitely. And so given that, you know, creating systems, you know, in itself, it's a challenging thing. How did you stay committed to it? You know, this whole direction of, you know, continuous improvement and trying to systematize the business on the go. How did you stay committed to this direction?
I think the benefits are immediately quantifiable, not necessarily bottom line wise. Don't look to see, you know, the bottom line. Don't look to see dollars right away, but think of your time in terms of dollars and see how almost immediately your staff doing the tasks that you've delegated to them and empowered them to do buys you the time to go and do the things that matter. Because the things that you were doing over and over and over that you've now systematized and handed off to someone, they don't matter. What really matters is building a brand, doing the things of value for your particular business. In our case, it was building the brand. It was making sure the word was out there. And you get to see the value, and you get to see that come back to you. And that validates the effort, you know, that you put into creating the system in the first place. And that's what kept us going.
Well, during a pre-interview, you asked the question, basically, how did you know which systems or processes to create first for the business? And you give this answer, which I like. You say it was basically work on anything that would affect the bottom line first. Can you expand on that for the listener?
Yeah, the bottom line piece was the food cost and labor in our particular case. In food service, food cost and labor combined are called prime cost, and they're often 60-70% of gross. So those are two things that we needed to address up front. Mm-hmm. And the first way we did that was by creating and implementing a kitchen Bible.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect example. And in our particular case, that kitchen Bible, we benefited from it in two ways. It's a bottom line, immediate bottom line impact, but it's also the thing that's most time consuming as a restaurateur, food and labor. And you get to address them both at once and then frees you up to go and do a ton of other things. So it may not necessarily be the case for a lot of the listeners and their particular businesses, but when you can kill two birds with one stone, you obviously do. And in our case, developing and implementing a kitchen Bible hit the bottom line right away and freed us up to go and do all the other things.
And you also mentioned one mistake you made initially where you tried to use the Subway operations manual to basically systematize everything. Can you talk about that? Let the listener learn from that.
that's right. So that example I gave earlier about, you know, the 2,000-page operations manual that Subway hands over to franchisees when they buy in.
Yeah.
And we got access to one of those, and we sat there, and we used that to kind of mimic our own. And you sit there, and you see, like, well, they talk about how you load the toilet paper in the guest bathroom. Like, we have to get down to that level. We need to do that. And that's not the right mindset. The first thing you do is what impacts bottom line and what frees you up the fastest. And, you know, in food, that's the kitchen Bible. That's a mistake. When I look back on it, something I think we spent far too much time on that didn't necessarily yield value immediately. Look at the things that you do the most, the things that touch your customer most often, the things that hit the bottom line first, mm-hmm. and address those.
Yeah. And so we've already talked about some of the systems you had in place. So my question really was trying to see if there was something else we're missing. So besides the basically, you know, what systems you had in place to enable the employees know what they need to know. And we've talked about the kitchen Bible, and then we're talking about the operations manual. Was there something else that you wanted to cover?
Well, for the most part, all the different policies and procedures in our business, in the food service industry, fall into the operations manual. Mm. And, you know, we addressed things like uniform policy, cell phone policy. Those things, they weren't as critical as the kitchen Bible was. They weren't as critical as a lot of things that touch the customer. And we focused on everything at once when we should have started, you know, with the things that are hit the bottom line, the things that touch the customer first, and slowly you work your way down to all that stuff.
Okay. So you also mentioned something about how, you know, I think maybe this has to do with the system of making sure everybody knew what exactly to do, that you don't want to be the trainer and you don't want to be the guy who's training people forever. Talk about how that played a role and how you kind of got yourself out of being a trainer in the future, I guess.
Yeah, well, that speaks to the whole thing about empowerment again. It's like, You did the task for as long as it took for you to best understand it and to know, you know, what it takes to do, how long it takes to do, how much it costs to do. And then you go and you empower someone else to do it and you delegate that task to that person. But you don't want to be the person constantly delegating that task. You know, if the idea is to grow beyond mm-hmm. the point where you're doing even that, you need to make sure that the person you just empowered to do it understands the value in what they've been taught to do, but then the value in teaching others to do it that way as well. And that was something that we saw value in upfront and made sure that the person that we empowered to do the thing that we were doing then realized why they were doing it and why they needed to teach the people that came on beyond them how to do it that way.
And is there some things that, you know, the listener should pay attention to or look out for when they're trying to, you know, because what basically you're saying is on one level you were doing the implementation yourself. That was the first level. Then you took yourself out of being the one doing the work to getting somebody else so you can train them to do the work. But then there's another level after that where you're no longer even doing the training anymore. Is you're getting somebody else to come in and do the training, you know, based on all the different levels. And I'm wondering, is there something on that level where you're trying to replace yourself as a trainer? Is there anything the listener should be looking out for to pay attention to and stuff like that?
Yeah, that speaks to personality, and that your staff, when you go and you start empowering them to do the things that you've been doing and you delegate that task, you're going to see that some people are more receptive to it than others. And the ones that are most receptive to the new process, the process that you've developed, and understand why you went through the process of developing it, those are the people that are ultimately going to be your advocates, and you're going to train the trainer, they're going to be the trainer. They're going to be the person that then goes on to train new hires. Because realistically, if you've done it, all right, you understand how it needs to be done, you've documented the process, and now you've handed it off to someone else. If that person leaves, do you want to be the person that needs to then train the next person and the next person after that? That's still not an ideal scenario for an entrepreneur. You want to be at the point where you can now then have the person that you've empowered to do the task and sees value in it. You want them to now be the person that trains your new hire and the person beyond that and the person beyond that. So it's kind of just finding somebody to step into that role so you can focus on the things that only you can do.
And that's awesome. And I'm curious too, what tools or ways do you want to actually document, you know, the procedures and processes you had in your business? You know, feel free to share the tools that you used at that time.
Everything was done. It was very, very archaic. Everything done.
Whatever works.
Right. Everything done via Word and Excel. Everything less the kitchen Bible. There was software for the restaurant industry, for food service in particular. There's a ton of different versions of it out there, but there's software that helps you kind of menu, do your menu engineering and turns out recipe cards and things that you can use for that. But for us, it was just about, we started with handwriting and making our notes and ultimately typing it up and putting it in a nice Word format that could be referenced in a binder. So nothing earth shattering, but but that binder in turn saved us tons and tons of time and money and energy. So you may not see a lot of value in sitting there and handwriting and then ultimately typing up what you did this morning, but just know that when you get to hand it off to someone else and then hold them accountable for it, you're going to benefit from that in the long run.
Yeah, and that just goes to show that, you know, systems don't have to be complicated. In your case, it was simple and it delivered results. So how did you track and verify the results being delivered by your employees?
At the end, the systems that you put into place, well, since we came into the business with no experience, we had to be understanding. We had to know that there would be pushback, and we had to be receptive to it. So we would sit down, especially after implementing something new, and we would listen to what staff had to say about it. And it almost reinforces the buy-in and that element of empowerment when you let them tell you why they think what you told them to do doesn't quite make sense, and be willing to adapt. And in some cases, they may have some insight, but it's not right. And you can go back and forth on why it's not, but just do it the right way. In other cases, what they had to say made sense more so than what you'd given them to do in the first place. You go and you make adjustments.
You also mentioned that you guys, in order to track results that it delivered, you started using customer surveys and also sales reports as well. Talk about that.
Yeah, you'll see customer feedback will be it's the first thing, right? If you implement anything, your customer, if it touches your customer, they're going to be the first to let you know. So we had customer surveys, we monitored Yelp, We did all those things. We talked to customers. We touched every table whenever possible. And so you'll get feedback almost right away. And if something's not working, be willing to adjust and don't be stuck in your ways. And that's something that we were good about too. And so we would track it that way. Customer feedback in our case was the first and foremost, but then there's also peer evaluations, self-evaluations, opportunities for us to sit down with staffers one-on-one and talk to them about how they think things are going. Just keep the conversation, keep it open, and let them tell you if you ask them to do something a certain way and they've been doing it for a week and they have some feedback on why they don't necessarily think that's the best way, let them tell you that. But then also be ready to ask them what is a better way. If you don't have a better way, then you're not adding value by saying that this isn't the right way.
You also mentioned that it gets to a point where you have a lot more employees and it becomes a lot more difficult to do the one-on-one sitting down. So you then begin to rely on reports. Can you talk about some of those reports that you guys started relying on to help guide tracking of the results?
Yeah, in our particular case, we were able to leverage point of sale, back office point of sale reports. And I don't know how often the listeners and other businesses can do that in food service. Everything is tracked, so it makes it a little easier. But there's reports in every business. Even when I worked corporate finance, there were reports. There's ways to track performance. So in our particular case, we were able to look in the back office. You'd look in point of sale, and you'd see who did what on which day, and those reports were invaluable to us to then go and revisit things that we thought were working well. But the report said otherwise. Mm-hmm. That's when you go and you would address those specific things with staffers. So it's going to be
trust but verify,
right? Yeah, and it's going to be different for everybody. You know, different businesses are different, but you know how you measure success in your particular business. So think about what those key performance indicators are. Exactly. Yeah. What are your KPIs? Address those. Those are where you need to start.
So at that time in the business, it became a point where you were able to now have systems in the business. But I was curious, what did you now start focusing on when you started having systems in place that allowed you to be freed up and you didn't have to be more into the nitty-gritty? What did you start focusing on in the business at that time?
That's when the shift happened. You know, when you talk about the tipping point, that was the tipping point. When the systems were there and freed you up to do the things that only you can do, which is be a mouthpiece for your business. Essentially, it's something only you can do. Only you can sell your business the way it ought to be sold. And when we got to the point where the systems were there and we were able to focus on that, that's when I think things really turned for us. And that's where we went from being, you know, a break-even business to a business that was thriving and a business that people were, you know, going out there and talking to each other about, and a brand that was consistent and a color and a look and a feel. And just it was huge for us. I can't emphasize enough how important it's hard to quantify, but it's huge.
I know you can't give us specific details of the sale itself, but I'm just curious, how did systematizing the business play a role into the actual sale? Maybe from the buyer's perspective, I'm just curious.
Wow, that's huge. That's where everything really. That's where the value in a food service business, in particular, really, the value is in what you've created as far as a brand goes. Because oftentimes you'll hear about restaurants, in particular, trading hand, and all they really buy are assets. They buy the used equipment, furniture, you know, the FF&E, the furniture, fixtures, and equipment in your space. They give you pennies on the dollar for that. But when you talk about having built something, a brand, a consistent and a color, a feel, a look, a menu, something that someone can really attach goodwill to, there's huge value in that. I can't speak to exactly what it was worth, but just know that by...
I'm hoping that you could spill some beans.
Yeah, just knowing that by putting in the added effort and just building a consistent brand, something worthwhile. Just think about, they can't even value the goodwill behind the Coca-Cola brand. People often try and they say it's a billion, it's 10 billion, it's whatever it is. You can't even put a number on it because that's how rich that brand is. And think about what you can do once you systematize the operation and you start focusing on brand. Think about what you as the owner can really do.
Okay, awesome. And so what's the very next step that the listener who has listened to this interview all the way to this point should do in regards to, you know, being able to, you know, transform their business so that, you know, it's systematized and it can run without them?
Well, chances are they're probably already doing it. If you're running a business, if you're running your own business, you're doing a handful of things every day. What you need to do is do them today, tomorrow, or at some point when you have a break in your day, write down what you did. You know, tomorrow do the same thing. The following day do the same thing. And over time, start putting in what time you did them at. What did you do? Who did you do it with? When did you do it? And then over time, I think you'll start to see repetition. You'll see the things.
See a trend, yeah.
Trend, yeah. So, you know, in a restaurant business, I could speak specifically to that. But I'm talking about in business in general, every proprietor is doing something every day. You know, when he comes in and he opens the doors, he's got a list of tasks. He may not realize he's doing them because he's been doing them for so long, but he's doing a handful of things in a certain order. If he writes that stuff down when he has a break, when he has his coffee at 9:30 or 10 o'clock, if he writes down what he did from when he got there until then, he'll start to quickly realize that he's done the exact same things in, you know, a very similar order over the course of a week. And it's time to delegate that task, those tasks. And that's the first step. Is you're already doing the first step.
So basically you're already doing it. Take the time to journal what you're doing and then create kind of like a trend to see, okay, specifically, how's your day being spent? And then when you know how your day is being spent, now start looking into delegating the work. I like that. Mm-hmm. And what books have actually influenced this way of thinking about, you know, building the business the way, you know, from a systematized standpoint, and share those books and why they had an influence on you?
Well, for me, I didn't know it existed at the time, but the E-Myth. The E-Myth is the Bible. Michael Gerber and the E-Myth is a must for anyone. I think it should be required reading for every entrepreneurship class at any university, anywhere. At the time, I didn't even know it existed, and I learned the hard way and had to figure this stuff out. But read the E-Myth, and that mindset, that approach to business is what we're talking about today. It's everything. It's everything we're talking about.
I like that. And so what's the best way for the listener to connect with you and thank you for doing the interview?
Well, I'm over at myfirstrestaurant.com. They can get me there. They can see what we're working on. If there's any aspiring restaurateurs out there, they could just book a free coaching call there. I'd love to get on the phone with them and just listen to their like what they're thinking about doing and where they want to do it and what's going on. And it's something I do all day, pretty much every day, and I love it. I love the idea of building and creating and restaurant food service stuff in particular. They can find me there. And then I'm across social media just about everywhere. Gabe Restaurants on Twitter. And you can find me at My First Restaurant on Facebook. So and I respond to every single email. So they can find me at gabe@myfirstrestaurant.com. And I'd love to hear from everybody, just what you're working on. And if I can help you in any way, I'd love to be able to.
With all these places, ways to connect with you, might as well get the address as well. Okay. So besides that, is there a question that you were wishing that I would ask you during the interview that I didn't ask? And if so, you know, pose that question and the answer as well.
The one question, you asked a lot of really good questions about figures, which I think gives perspective. In my particular case, it was tough. I wished I had been able to answer more of those. I think a lot of times people need quantifiable figures to help them better understand what's being said and just give them a little bit of perspective.
Yeah.
So you tried. I wished I could have spoken more to that stuff. But I think that's important for people to understand, so it doesn't sound quite as abstract when we're talking about what systems are which and why they're important. Just know that there is quantifiable value to all this stuff.
Awesome. And so now I'm speaking to you, the listener who has been listening to this interview all the way to this point. If you found it valuable, I want you to leave us a positive review, hopefully a 5-star review on iTunes. And to do that, you go to sweetprocess.com/iTunes, and it will redirect you to our iTunes channel where you can leave your review. One of the reasons why you should leave your review is because the more people who, you know, you leave reviews, people are going to read the feedback and, you know, wonder why you actually left such a good review and come back to our show, listen to the show, and you know, the more eyeballs and listeners we have, the more we're inspired to go out there and get, you know, entrepreneurs like Gabe who will come in here and break down the reason for their success in their business and how they systematize their business so that you can learn from their success. And finally, if you are at that point in your business where you're tired of being the bottleneck in your business and you literally want to get stuff out of your head and document step by step how you get stuff done so your employees know exactly what you know so they can deliver results without you being there, well, then sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. Gabe, we're done.
Before you go, we want to leave you with a free gift. Get your free systemization checklist. Avoid wasting valuable time documenting procedures for the wrong tasks. Get it right the first time with the Systemization Checklist. Download the checklist by going to sweetprocess.com/checklist.